You're listening to the On Call Empath Show.
Hey, guys, we are back for another episode of the On Call Empath. And today I have a very, very special guest. I know I'm going to mess up the name, but I'm just going to try it anyways. Gerds, is that close enough?
Close enough. Okay.
Well, I am, you know, this is an honor for me to have you. I know you have a very big audience, a lot of female audience, but I wanted to come on and have you on a guest here to get a male's perspective, and we can bounce off ideas. You know, this is about trauma, the On-Call Empath. Tell us a little bit about you and how you got into everything, because I know you've been through quite a lot.
So growing up in the UK, so I'm born to Indian parents. Both my parents are immigrants who came to the UK in like the early 60s. Okay. But so I'm British born. And as you know, growing up, when you grew up in a new world or like a new country, there's always going to be confusion with your Western and your Eastern side.
Yeah.
But growing up, there was just so many conditionings that I had, like people pleasing, self-sacrificing, being a good Indian girl and trying to appease everybody else except myself. Mm-hmm. And I dreamt from a young age, I wanted to be a journalist. That was like my dream. I wanted to like share stories about health. And I went on this amazing journey of just going into the journalism world, studying it, and then working in a pharmacy, which is very strange. I worked in healthcare on the counter, and I used to dispense medications as well. And I always had a lot of people tell me their life problems. I must have been about like the age of 8. Everybody, even adults, young people, just come to me with their problems. And I used to just think, what am I doing? And it would happen in the pharmacy as well. I'd hand over somebody's medication and somebody would say to me, like the pharmacist would say, what are you doing? And I'd be like, I'm doing nothing. They're like, well, why are they talking to you so much? I'm like, I just literally say hi. And they just vomit that whole life story to me.
Yeah.
And like growing up, that happened everywhere I went, even in the journalism world, people would just share their life problems with me on like my breaks and my lunches. But yeah, I studied 2 degrees in journalism. I moved out to Canada for a bit and worked at a news channel there. And again, people sharing their problems. I had a lot of health problems growing up. It's quite hard to put it all, to say it all quite easily, but like I had eating disorders, I had depression. In Canada, my left arm stopped working. And that was just the pressure of everybody else's trauma and issues and me just not dealing with my own pain. So it got till about age 25 when I was in the city. I was working as a journalist, but then also as a publisher, I was just wanting a bit of extra money. And I was not happy in that job. Again, pushing and striving to be successful. And I collapsed. And I remember that day where, again, everybody in the office would tell me their problems. But the moment I collapsed on the floor and the ambulance came to, you know, to take me, check me out, nobody came to help me. They said they're too busy with work. And I remember...
Isn't that crazy?
Right? Like, what world are we in, right? Like...
I can contest to that.
Like I felt so hurt, Raj, at that moment. And I remember that night I walked home from the hospital and I said to myself, I don't want this life like this anymore. I want to, what happened to this happy Gerbs who was really young and silly and free? Where has she gone? And I'd vowed to myself that I was going to leave that job in a few months, but as the universe works, I was made redundant and it just set me free. But then as that set me free, about 2 months into that, I was just turning 25 then, I had a cancer scare. And that was the moment. And that was like, that changed everything for me. Because up until that point, I was pushing hard. At this point, I was an alpha female. I was hiding my emotions because, as you know, being an empath, we're told to toughen up. So I had this persona of being this tough cucky. And I was just doing everything that brought me joy. And the more I did that, the more I just found myself. And then I was always helping. I was always helping some people. And I just remember seeing a leaflet and it said life coach. And I remember thinking, oh, I'm already doing this anyway. And that's kind of what led me onto this whole journey of empowering empaths. And,
you know, I hear this so much, especially with empaths. They go through, I don't want to say a test, but they go through some hellish stuff, like just like you're describing. And then you get to a point where, if you want to call it a breakdown, or, you know, that moment where you just can't take anymore. And then the shift happens. And I've been talking to so many guests about this shift where there's that moment where they went through so much in life, whether, you know, it's a health scare or abuse, trauma, and they get to a point and it's like they, it was almost like all that was not for anything. You actually came out on the other side and now you're helping people and you're just kind of turning things around. And it had, you had to go through all that pain and suffering to be the awesome person you are today. And, and so, yeah, that's the theme that I get. And with people pleasing and everything that you're saying of everyone coming to you, it's an energy that I think we get from childhood. And that's why I want to kind of focus on and brought you on to this episode, because I know you have a huge female audience. I also have like males and females. So I want to bounce off some ideas off of you and just kind of get your take on things. When it comes to people pleasing and all these people coming to you for help, and then when you needed it, they were just basically, I mean, crickets, they weren't around you. I've experienced that. Unfortunately, I've talked to many people that have, and it's very common among empaths. Why do you think that is? Why do you think, you know, people pleasing, why do we people please so much, especially in our culture?
Oh, gosh.
It's a loaded question.
Yeah. Well, within, well, I could just speaking from experience being within our Indian culture, right? Like, I know we're from different like backgrounds, but it's still that Indian culture, right?
Sure.
So I don't know. I can speak more from a woman's perspective. So from a woman's perspective within our community, women have always been shut down. They've always told to follow the rules. They're always told to listen to the elders, and men know everything. Mm-hmm. Whenever a woman speaks up, they're seen as this bad woman. Like she's like the villain of the story. And I think a lot of us as girls, I don't know, with guys, it's slightly different again, but with girls, it's like, we want to make mommy and daddy happy. We want to make the community happy, but we don't even know we're doing it because we've been almost like spoon fed certain things from a young age.
Yeah.
So they'll say, don't do this or don't do that when you go to so-and-so's house. Act good, be kind, smile. Even though you're in pain, just smile and pretend like everything is okay. And the same with guys. It's the same like mindset where, you know, you have to look good in front of the community, have this great car and this great house and show you're amazing.
Go to the best schools. And so you can talk to people at parties and say, hey, my kid's going to Harvard. Where's yours going? And it's almost like they're living through their kids, you know, it's like they're putting the kids on a pedestal and, you know, I'm sure they love them, you know, I'm sure they love their kids, but it gets to a point where, I mean, I've told this story before. I have a friend, he committed suicide when I was in high school, and his parents basically told him if he doesn't get into like medical school. And I remember he didn't tell me like all that was going on in his house, but I knew that his parents were very, you know, that if he came home with anything less than a certain grade, you know, they would threaten him saying, you know, we're going to send you back and this and that. Wow. And he hung himself in the garage. And the sad part is, I swear to you, I saw the dad like 2 weeks ago walking by himself in the neighborhood. I was driving past. I can guarantee that was him, because I remember his face. He's a lot older now, and he was walking alone. And I'm like, you know, I'm not going to be the one to, you know, say, hey, what happened? Because I know what happened, but we're supposed to be like this about it in the culture. And the minute we say anything, we have mental problems. The minute we have these discussions like you and I are having right now, we're spoiled kids. We don't know what we're talking about. And that's like a mechanism that they use to keep us shut.
I was just going to say, they say that you haven't had it harder than us. Yeah. It's always about how they feel. It's never about how we feel. It's almost like because they left that world from back home, they think it's not hard for us here. They forget that they put 10 times more pressure on us because they didn't have that lifestyle that we had. So
you have it so well. You know, you have a car, you have an opportunity, and the fact of the matter, you do, but like going through the school system is, for a lot of people, it's hell. Some people don't make it out. because they're different. They get abused at home, and then they go to school and they get made fun of and bullied. And guess what happens when that person grows up? Yeah. A lot of issues.
I can relate with that because I had really long hair growing up. So I didn't cut my hair till I was probably about 14. And I was made fun of because I had this greasy long plait and I had big eyebrows. And, it's hard enough just trying to fit in. And especially when you go to just majority white schools and you're the only few brown people or ethnic people, you kind of are seen as like weird.
Yeah, you're like the last person to be picked on everything. But in school, like most of them are number one in all the academic stuff. But then everything else, I mean, things are changing, obviously. But back when I was going to school, it was like I was like the only oddball out. And that's something that's what developed me into who I am today. So I'm kind of glad that happened because I can adapt and I understand why, how to treat myself good and love myself and know my boundaries and, you know, people pleasing, stuff like that. But back then, no one's going to teach you that.
I just think even the people around us don't even know how to teach it because they don't even know self-love. They don't even know boundaries themselves. There is no boundary in our households, right?
Like You're only supposed to obey and you're basically looked upon as property. I brought you in. I can take you out type attitude. Now, I'm not saying every case. There are a lot of great, phenomenal, families that I've come across where they don't do that. But I could say that the majority of the ones that I've coached and the people that I've talked to, a lot of my friends, there seems to be a theme going on. And that's why I wanted to bring you on, because I feel like people need to know about this, because I remember like going to a therapist in the US that they don't understand. Why don't you just have a family meeting, or why don't you just have a one-on-one? And I can't tell them that's not how it works. Our dynamic is different. Yeah. So I wanted to ask you, what are some toxic cultural norms? And did you ever go to a therapist or someone to talk about this? And what was their reaction to it? Were they able to be helpful?
So what I was going to say is that a lot of my clients are people of color, and a lot of them say they cannot relate with their therapists or their coaches because they don't understand the immigrant trauma, right? So they don't understand what their parents went through. Then they don't understand the first generation trauma and the expectations and how we're supposed to behave and act. They're just like, just go and have a chat with them. It's not that simple. With me, I actually did the inner work myself in the beginning. So when I ran out of the hospital, I actually wrote 30 pages of my life and saw patterns straight away. Mm-hmm. I've always been a bit of they call it a generational pattern shifter. But years later, I did actually seek help when there were certain things happening in my life. Mm-hmm. But I always noticed that whoever I spoke to, they didn't understand the Indian culture. So they'd be like, oh, well, you should do this or do that. I'm like, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is not to just aim at the Indian culture. I think I have a lot of Asian friends as well.
Yeah.
And they've had it worse. I've had people on this podcast where they would get beaten because they wouldn't, comply with the parents. They would literally get beaten for not having the grades. So there's been extreme cases. And I mean, it kind of goes upon not just South Asians, but Asians and other cultures. I know that I've had Italian, a lady from Italy, she said it's kind of similar, so it just seems there's a trend, and you don't find that too much in the American culture. I haven't found that, it's more like you're 18, you're adult, and now you go out, get a job, or
Sorry, go on.
I mean, that's what most of the people tell me. They're like, okay, after you become 18, you go and work on your career, you go to college, whatever. But at least with the Indian culture, I mean, with men, you have to kind of take care of your family, look after them, or you live with your wife in the family circle. But I mean, obviously that's changing. There's a lot of people that just go out and make their own lives, have their own families, and they never talk to the parents. But a lot of the stuff that I've come across is like they all live in one house and they're living with the wife and they have their kids and the grandparents. And it's kind of good to all be in one house. But then at the same time, it's like, in the American culture, I don't think that would be widely accepted.
Yeah, I think it depends on the family, because there's obviously some families there isn't that much trauma. It all depends on the trauma of the family, right? I've actually had even like Black clients as well who've said same things as like they don't feel like they're being heard, or they've been undermined by their therapists or coaches, or they've sometimes even used, even for our people as well, like we're being aggressive, and it's like, no, we're not being aggressive. We share our emotions. It's just how we're feeling, right? But yeah, oh gosh, I've got the question what you were saying. So like within Indian households, like in the UK, there are changes happening. So people are buying their own homes and having separate from their families. But there's people like me who moved out when I started like traveling when I was about 19, but I moved out properly when I was 21. Even still to this day, my parents get asked, it's ridiculous, so your daughter lives out? Yes. She's not married? No. She's in her 30s? Or she's, you know, she's overstepped the mark. And you think, who are you? Like, you're some random stranger from the temple asking about my life. I haven't seen you in 10 years. But they feel guilty and obliged that they have to answer what, you know, their questions. And it's like, we're in modern times. A girl can live out before marriage. A girl can stand on her own two feet. But if she does, she's bad. You don't bring her to home because she will create problems in the family, or she's too independent and there's no control of her. And I think that's why there's that dynamics of living together, is they want to control the unit.
They do
it their way.
And what you're saying, it happens to men as well. They're like, you know, so what are you doing? Where'd you go to school? And I'll spit right back. I'm like, how's your wife? What does she do? And how long has she been, you know, in that company? Oh, how's your, you know, kid? And so when I start pushing like that, they're like, that's, you know, they kind of give me like a look like, no, I'm the one that's asking the questions. And then when I don't budge and I'm like, you're going to try to ask me about my personal life of who I'm getting, you know, dating or where I'm living and what school I went to and whatever your motive is, you know, that's your thing, but it's not appropriate. I don't care. I don't know you. You know, why are you going to be asking me all these personal questions, which I don't feel like discussing with you? You're not a counselor. You're not my academic counselor. You're not paying my bills. I mean, I could just tell them, like, look, I'm homeless. You know, are you not going to talk to me now? Because so it's just, it goes around, even no matter where you are in the world. Like you just proved it. Like it happens to the best of us.
Yeah. And it's so silly because like times have moved forward and you think everyone is like more educated than before. So you'd think that these kind of things would just slowly disappear, but no, they're so prevalent. So like, even when I was at university, because I'm quite strong headed and like, I know my culture, but I might not look like I know my culture. It's quite funny. Cause like I would sing on stage at the temple and things like that. Right. So I'd get a lot of these like guys who lived at home, who would then start saying, you're the type of woman that would wear the trousers in the house. And you're like, excuse me, I don't even know you. Like, you don't even know what I'm like in a family. Yeah. But automatically, they're trying to find a problem with me because they feel insecure in themselves.
Yeah.
But again, that's, you know, and it took me a while. Like, I used to get upset about it when I was like 21. Mm. But then I realized in their household, probably the dad is controlling the mum and the mum doesn't have the right to say.
Right.
And they're looking for somebody to control. And they like me because I'm different, but they still they want to control, right?
Yeah.
So there's this deep pattern of this manipulation of wanting to control women. Not all men, I can say vouch, not all Indian men are like that, but there are a lot of guys who, doesn't matter how educated you are as a woman, as an Indian woman in modern times, they still want to
control you,
bring you down, to make themselves feel better.
You know, when I was in high school, like I did some crazy stuff. Like I cut my hair really short and I put earrings on, and God forbid, that was that was like helicopters over my house. Like they did not approve, and so what that did was that caused me to even go harder. Like I started doing hanging around the wrong crowd. And then, you know, in college, I totally disregarded everything. I did everything opposite. And, and a lot of people, they'll come up to me like, you don't typically do what Indians do. And what is that supposed to mean? You know, when I go out to sign my name somewhere, people will be like, okay, Raj, and then how do you spell your last name? And they're ready for this long, long name. And I'll tell them what my last name is, and then they'll be like, oh, that's it? We're waiting for more. So there's a lot of assumptions. Maybe they think I'm a doctor or in IT, or I own a 7-Eleven or a hotel, whatever the whole, you know, the Simpsons type of, you know, Apu, when I don't fit that mold and they see like, wow, this guy's tatted up. He's half of his body's tatted. He eats meat and he, you know, plays rock music. Like, that is not the typical IT person. And so I think when they see that, it's kind of like, okay, this guy, you know, he's straight away. He's not one of us. But I'd look at him, don't be like him, like type of thing. And I'm like, I'll be like, rah, you know, just kind of scare the little kid off. You know, I'm like, yeah, don't be like me. But you know what? I'm happy being who I am. And I'm not going to let any culture or person define who I am. If you don't like me, that's your problem, you know?
I just think at the end of the day, we were born to be ourselves for a reason. There's a whole reason why we're individuals. God didn't say to the universe or higher power, whatever you want to call it, didn't say, you must follow this trend and you must behave like this. Then we're just all robots. There's a reason why we have our quirks, our creativity. And I don't understand where this culture came from, where we needed to follow those rules. I really don't know. But what that does is actually causes more depression and anxiety within people within our community. You know, a lot of them are living two lives because they don't know how to show the real side to their parents. So they're putting on a front, and behind the scenes they're doing completely the opposite.
Yeah, then what they're contradicting.
They're messing themselves up, and then they're having like midlife crisis or quarter life crisis, or drinking excessively, or taking drugs, or, you know, numbing their pain, but not realizing it's all because they're not being true to themselves. And I think that's where like yourself and I and many other empaths got to, where we were just lost. We wanted to be ourselves, but we were afraid to be ourselves because we were told if we're vulnerable, then, you know, people are not going to like it, or if we're too sensitive, you know, this is going to happen to us, or the world's going to eat us up. So we put on a persona, but really, what's the point of having a persona? You know, we only have this one life. Just be true to yourself.
Be who you are. And so I wanted to kind of circle back. You mentioned something earlier when you got sick. Everyone kind of left you and you were in the dark. And that just, I think that's global for empaths. I think we give so much, and then when it's our turn, we're asking for help. They're not there. And especially with, you know, our culture, and I know you're very familiar with this, is, you know, people, they'll help you just for show. And then when it's time, they're nowhere around. In fact, a lot of the people that I grew up with, you know, we went out, we did parties together. We played outside, but then once you grow up, it's like they went their separate ways, and they knew like something wasn't right. They saw stuff going on, but they just kind of looked the other way. So to me, you're guilty by association. You are part of the problem. So what I'm saying is, like, all the childhood friends that you have that you thought they were your good friends, they're just now acquaintances now. And when you need help, they're not there for you, especially in a time of need. Now, I get it. They got their own families. They got their own jobs. I'm not saying like they have to check up on you, but like when you don't hear them from years, and then all of a sudden they call you, hey, what's up? It's like, hey, I don't want to talk to you. Click.
Yeah. Well, you see, that happens to me a lot. So like, I have my few close friends who we will be there for each other. And I've learned that over the years, you know, have people around you where you're there for one another. It's not give and take, right? So before growing up, I always had so many friends, right? Friends. But really, they weren't friends. They were people who just wanted to dump their stuff on me. And back then, I was like, I need to save everybody. I need to save the world. Oh, yes, I'm being good. I'll be nice and help them, right? And during this whole COVID situation, I've had like thousands of messages from people from my past contacting me. And straight away, they're like, hey, like you said, what's up? And I'm like, yeah, everything all right? Or any reason you're contacting? But for me, I've realized that because we're happy in our own skin as empaths, people want that light because they're afraid of finding their own light.
Yeah.
And it's so easy to just say, oh, I want that, instead of actually doing the inner work. And so a lot of empaths are so happy and full of joy. But when we like around somebody with heavy energy or somebody who has trauma or somebody just vents at us without our permission, you'll notice our energy just goes down. We get drained. Like for me, I used to collapse. I used to actually sometimes like when somebody would overload me, my jaw would just like become really tight.
Physical, and
like
I
couldn't speak. So Raj, like you'd have to literally put a teaspoon of sugar in my mouth. And, you know, I used to think, oh, there's something wrong with like, maybe I've got lack of vitamin C or something. But over the years, I realized it was other people's energy. And so when these people are trying to get back in contact with me, usually number one, I either ignore them because I know they're wanting, you know, as empaths, we can sense user energy, be they're unhappy in their own skin. And if, you know, if I do hear them out, I will literally say, I'm sorry, I can't do that. Like, here's my coaching services. However, you know me, I don't think it would be right. Or here's some numbers to a therapist or, you know, speak to these people, because at the end of the day, it's not my job to save everybody and it's not your job to save anybody. And
there's an totally expectation
on us, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because I've had so many old friends of mine that want something, like either coaching or, oh, I just got to pick your brain for a little bit. Well, okay, great. This is my hourly rate. Oh, you're going to charge me now. Okay. You've changed. And I'm like, yes, I did. And I'm going to put myself first. And if you think I'm an asshole for it, well, that's not my problem. So I got a lot of that. And then when I started to get in a groove where I kept saying, kept my boundaries tight, they would just go away. And it's so funny because the minute you say no and they disappear, you know that that person was pretty much full of shit.
Yeah. Well, like it's a manipulation game, right? Because we were so caring that we gave all our time and energy away to others. And now we start saying no. Usually those people were the manipulators.
Yeah.
Those were the people that knew how to take advantage of us and didn't really care. I've been in situations where like family members, they're like once, like, gosh, years ago, my grandma passed away and like other people, I was there through like when they went through horrific things. Mm-hmm. But when it came to my like family members passing away, all of them on purpose chose to ignore me. And I remember that hurt.
Yeah.
And their excuses was, oh, we just didn't want to upset you. And I'm like, no, you just, in my head, I'm like, you just didn't want to be there. Just let's face it. But you see, that's the thing with empaths. Like as you heal your trauma, you heal the past, you start to realize who are your true circle. And you realize how many people, not just your friends, they're strangers. Like, I don't know with you, but I get strangers on the street wanting to tell me their life stories. I could be stood in the mall or, you know, in the supermarket just waiting to pay for my food. And somebody just tells me their whole problems. And I on purpose now will say, no, sorry, or I don't have time, or I just don't even interact. The moment you give eye contact, that's it. They just...
You're locked in. I had so many stories like that where people just start, I would say, vomiting basically all these words on you. And before they even get started, you give that eye contact and then they know, okay, this guy, I can push them a little further. And then you get to a point where they're just dumping everything. And then they call you every time, giving you that energy, even if it's over the phone. So I know a lot of my clients tell me the same thing where, you know, they deal with, you know, family members, friends, and they just call and they just dump all their problems on them. And then you are left drained. I've had even people just go on. And when I try to interject, they're like, hold on, let me finish. And then it just keeps going on. And when I get to that point, not anymore. I've usually just blocked those people now. But like, that's how I was before. I would feel guilty for cutting them off. And that's a trauma response. And the minute I started saying, you know, I'm sorry, I got to go, I have, you know, some work to do, they're like, yeah, just, hear me out. And I'm like, I'm not going to hear you out. And then you don't hear from them again.
Yeah.
They're going to go to the next person and try that stuff on them too. So that seems to be one of the toughest things for empaths that I, you know, I hear from a lot of the people that I've come across.
It's because we want to save everybody. We want everyone to be happy.
Yeah.
But then we forget about our own happiness because we're so busy focused on everybody else. And, you know, I've had people call me up like, gosh, when I was younger, like the parents were like hitting them and they're like, come save me. And I'm like, I don't even know where you live. But like, you know, then I would like try to find out where they were living. Right. And, you know, like, and then the next day I'll be at school. Oh, yeah, I'm fine now. And I'm like, what? But, you know, like you said, it's like this whole... we go through this cycle of just thinking about everyone else, but what we actually do is actually damage ourselves in the process. Like, I know that I got a lot of health problems because of other people's pains. Even working in the pharmacy, as you can imagine, just standing there and people already telling me their health problems and then vomiting their life stories, I was absorbing everything. Like, I would finish, and that would be on the weekends when I'd get home, I'd literally collapse. And my mom and dad would be like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, I'm just so tired. I was always tired. I was anemic for years. But actually, I wasn't anemic. I was energetically drained.
Drained, yeah. And that happens to the best of us. I need my alone time. As an empath, I will shut off the world, shut off my phone. And I'll take, you know, a moment to like recharge when I need to. And then when I'm ready, I'll go back out. But just kind of getting back to everything that you're saying and tying it up. I mean, I know there are a lot of people out there that what really gets my blood boiling is they're like, you're not the victim when you get out of that victim mode. And I had a friend recently say that you're like, you know, you're never going to heal unless you're out of that victim mode. And to me, what that really means is shut up. I don't want to hear you. I'm sick and tired of hearing you. And this is probably the best way to shut you up. And that's why when I, like you talked about, a few circle of friends, I only have like a couple, maybe two or three. Everybody else, I don't dare say anything personal or anything that I'm going through, because they're going to be like, oh, just tough it up. You stop being the victim. When you stop being a victim, call me. And so those are the dangerous people. Those are the people that, like, they're out there. I mean, some of them are narcissists. Some of them are just, you know, they have personality disorders. They always want to dish it, but they never want to take it. And so when they give you, you know, their problems, you're expected to listen. And then when it's your turn, it's like, I got no time. Sorry. You know, at least for the people that I've come across over the years. And so I've gotten to the point where I can see them a mile away now. So I know that, so I can almost tell you what the person's behavior is going to be like, just based on the way they are talking to me. They're building up to something. Hey, you mind if I talk to you about something real quick? What do you want to sell me? You know, it's not, I can just feel like the energy that if you were genuine, you would go another way. I mean, as empaths, I think that's just a gift that we have. And some people don't realize that, but you can use that superpower to kind of weed out those toxic people. But so just wrapping up here,
I was just gonna say it's interesting you said that, because these people that turn up from my past, right, just nowadays I just go, what do you want? And they're like, that's rude. I'm like, oh really? Well, you clearly want something. But like yourself, I sense it straight away. I see the message. I'm like, right, yeah, they want something. What do they want? So I don't even entertain how are you and all that. I just get to the point if I can be bothered. But I was just going to say something that you said about a bit earlier on about our culture and stuff. Like, there's this whole culture mentality of like the elders know better, and if we need to respect them. And it's like, respect is earned,
right?
I think that's where our culture doesn't understand, like, you could be like an elderly person, but you could be like fucked in the head, right? You could have messed up trauma. You could be bipolar. You could be all these different things. But why should then somebody respect you, right? If you're treating badly, well, other people badly.
You're supposed to respect your elders. And no matter what age you are, you could be 50 years old. You're still going to be below them. And people say there's not a caste system. But I say bullshit. I say there is a caste system. It's similar.
You say that, right? But then you hear so-and-so saying something in the temple. Like, I remember growing up, oh, so-and-so married so-and-so. Oh, he's a bit dark. Or, oh, she's a bit fair. And and straight away when she's fair, it's like, oh, she's like a goddess. Or he's a goddess or a god. But, you know, it's like, but the guy's educated. Why does that matter? It's this inherited like colorism within them that automatically makes them think that there's something wrong with somebody because their color is slightly got a bit more melanin in it. It's very strange.
It is. And that's a huge part of the culture. And hey, I'm saying it on my podcast that you can't judge people just by their melanin on their skin, because the people that are complaining about it are almost as dark as most. So it's like, look at yourself before you talk. You know, it's really bad. I think that you have to take someone's worth based on their skin color.
The thing is, I can relate to that because my skin color has changed. Like growing up, it was like, it just changes. Like I was very fair growing up, and then I got tanned, and then, you know, I've been different complexions, right, growing up. And I noticed when I was lighter skinned, just how it was, people treated me different. But the moment I got darker, when I was about 12 or 13 years old, people treated me differently in the temple. And I just remember feeling like, or they'd be like, oh, so-and-so's daughter is very pretty. And I'm like, what's wrong with me then? But so I've been on both end of the sticks. Yeah. And I know how messed up it is. And it doesn't, it sounds awful, but it doesn't matter how much education or how much money you have. At the end of the day, they still look at that. And I think that's, that needs to just, it needs to break down, because it's ridiculous.
Well, it's probably been going on for generations, well before us. Yeah. And it's going to continue going on. But that's why, you know, having conversations like this brings awareness. Of course, this is like not, you know, this type of talk that we're doing would be considered we're too like messed up people. We weren't raised properly. That's why we're doing what we're rebelling. No, it's not. It's 2021. That shit ain't working. Not in this day and age. Speak your truth. Yeah. Be yourself, you know, and so now just kind of wrapping up, I just want to give you the last word. What are some tips that you can give somebody that's listening right now? They don't have to be like South Asian or Asian, but just in general, somebody that's going through like a hard time dealing with kind of like what you just described with their family dynamics, toxicity, and just trying to be authentic and be live in peace.
Yeah, I would say number one, look at the patterns in your family. Look at the patterns in your friendships, and look at the patterns in even in your work circle. Who's causing you headache? Who's making you feel tired? And just circle them around and write down like how you feel when you're around them. Mm-hmm. But then also circle the ones who make you feel happy, who make you feel safe.
Yeah.
And then I would start speaking your truth. Now, speaking your truth, it's natural you're going to get angry, because it's years of repressed anger inside where we have been people pleasing for so long. But the more you start saying no to things you don't want to do and yes to things you want to do, the easier it'll get. Like, sure. I don't know if for yourself as well, Raj, but the moment I said no, I remember I was like shaking. I was like, no. And it was like a big moment in my life, because I didn't know how to say no before. Mm-hmm. But the moment I said no, it got easier and easier every time I did it. Mm-hmm. And it's just easier now. Third thing I would say is forgive yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, we all have some form of trauma or something in our life. And
everyone,
you know, yeah, exactly. Whether it's big, whether it's small, yeah. Like, forgiving yourself will set you free. That was one of the biggest things for me, was that the moment I forgave myself, it didn't matter what anyone else had done to me. The moment I forgave myself, I was able to forgive them and move forward in my life. And I found that that was what changed my life around, because I didn't know how to forgive people back then. I was like, how dare they treat me this way? Why are they treating me this way? But the moment you forgive, you allow yourself to trust your inner wisdom. And then you can start going on this journey of finding things that light you up. That's the next thing I would say. Find things that give you joy, whether that's like skipping, whether running, whatever you did, even when you were growing up, do some of the things that you enjoy. If you've always wanted to paint, go paint. If you always wanted to learn a new skill, you go do that, because that will bring in your inner wisdom, and that will bring in this whole new like creative energy. Sure. And just trusting your inner wisdom. Yeah. And number five, I would say that, seek help if you need it, because even if it's not you even speaking to a therapist, it's always great to speak to a therapist or a coach or somebody who can understand you, but find somebody who understands you, not somebody that's going to make you feel worse after, because there's plenty of people, therapists and coaches, who have so much trauma and they inflict it onto their clients. So look into people that are going to make you feel safe and understood. And I would say, look into empaths. You know, there's so many of us out there who are doing this amazing work, like Raj as well. Like, you're doing amazing work, and I love what you're doing. And like, there's so many other empaths, like, who are ready to empower you, who've been through similar experiences, maybe not to the same extent, or maybe to extreme extents, but they can help to guide you to really get on a path of inner wisdom and just trusting your own inner light. Because at the end of the day, you have these amazing gifts, dear empaths, and you just need to go out there and share it and ignore what other people have to think, because whether you're doing good or bad, somebody's going to hate you. That's one of my lessons I've learned over the years.
Yeah. If you don't have haters, you're not doing it right. and I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of hate from this episode, but I'm okay with that.
It's all good. It's all love. It's all love here.
Yeah. And all you guys that are listening in this episode, if you can share this with somebody, I'm sure there's thousands, hundreds of thousands of people out there that could benefit from this conversation, because you guys are not alone, and it could be anybody. You know, you don't have to be in a certain culture or whatnot. Trauma is trauma. There's no face to it.
100%. Yeah. Thank you, Raj, for just having me on here, and just thank you for, you know, you're bringing out your inner light, because, you know, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now if you didn't trust that journey.
Well, I'll tell you, I've had almost 100 episodes, and I've never really really explained what behind the scenes of my full trauma, but I feel like this episode kind of brought that out of me. Like, I just wanted to just send it out, and that's why, you know, I felt like this is going to be a good episode, because you're coming from the same culture as me. You're like equal to that, so how are you gonna change? You can't change anybody, so I'm gonna be like, I'm going to do my own thing. I'm not going to try to change anybody. And that's one lesson that I've learned. And that's what I tell a lot of my clients is, don't try to change anybody. Change your response and how you react to these types of situations. Because now you've explained, like, you know, you're going to these places and people are coming up to you and asking you like personal stuff. I don't even put myself in that position in the first place. I just don't go. I go to places where I know where I'm going to have like-minded people, empaths, highly sensitive people that are not going to judge me by my skin tone or what I drive or how much money I have in the bank. These are authentic people. And it's so hard to find nowadays in 2021. And so I wanted to create this podcast to create one place where anyone could come in and just say, hey, take me as I am. And that's why I believe that this podcast is done well. And, you know, and I love having people like you on here, and you're doing amazing work yourself.
Oh, bless you. Thank you. this empath community is growing. You know, I remember when I first realized as empath back in, gosh, I think it was 2017 after my operation. And I saw the term empath. I cried, Raj, even though I've done so much clearing in my life. Like, I cried because it was the first time I felt understood.
Yeah.
And, you know, I looked up other empaths. I was like wanting to connect with them. And, you know, all of us, we're a small community, but we're growing. And I think we're going to be the ones that are able to help other empaths who have been so afraid of thinking there's something wrong with them, reminding them that actually there's so much right about them.
Yeah. At the end of the day, we're all human, guys. We all want to be heard. We all have feelings. And, you know, hopefully after all this thing is over with the pandemic, you know, the world will start to realize that, you know, there are good people out there. And this is, I'm kind of glad the pandemic happened, because there would be no on-call empath, because I wanted to start some movement. And I started it right before the pandemic. And this podcast would not be born if it wasn't for something that drastic to happen, that we're probably not going to see anything that crazy in our lifetimes. But that, you know, it took something like that disaster to come out at the very end with something productive and helpful to help millions of, not millions, but like thousands of people.
It's getting there. It's getting there. So.
My goal is millions.
Yeah, it's coming.
We'll see. So before we take off, can you just tell us where we can find you? Like, just tell my listeners like what your social media handles are.
Sure. So on Instagram, I am GURDS. So that's IAMGURDS. You can find me on GURDS Hundle. So Hundle is HUNDAL at Hotmail. Oh, sorry. Hotmail. I don't know what happened there. GURDSHundle.com. To be honest, if you just type in my name, GURDS Hundle, on Google, it comes up with like one of my books years ago written, the podcast, The Inner Light Project, which is my podcast on iTunes. You'll be able to find me everywhere. And even on Facebook, it's just my name. I'm everywhere. Yeah.
Well, I definitely want you back in the future. And I have some big plans coming up with the On-Call Empath, with bringing coaches from all around the world, all in under the On-Call Empath. So I would be honored to have you come back. If you're willing to.
I'd be delighted. Yeah, thank you.
Sounds good. All right, guys, I hope you got something out of this episode. I certainly did. Feel free to reach out to me or Gerds. I'll leave everything in the comments below. But in the meantime, please share this episode with anyone that might be going through something similar. And it would really make my day if you can give me a review and let me know how I'm doing. With that said, you guys are never alone. We are out.
You're listening to the On Call Impact.